Hotline, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. We'll be back with you concerning this matter on Tuesday with Steve Gallagher.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, hopefully they're going to be the views of our good friend John Stormer for this next hour. And that name may not mean a great deal to you today, but certainly 40, 50 years ago, that name was very, very well known. Because I first got started studying what was going on in the world in 1962, and 2 years later, we had the Goldwater election, 1964, and a book appeared at that time. It was called Men Dare Call It Treason, and it went into the background, certainly, of the communist influence in America, how we were moving rapidly towards a socialist or Marxist philosophy here in America. But then the book talked about a little-known group at the time called the Council on Foreign Relations, a group which dominated both political parties and really made mockery out of the electoral process we had at that time. And that book sold, I think, something like 7 million copies. John Stormer didn't make a lot of money on that. He sold them very, very economically. But that book had a profound impact on the thought of the American people at that time. Many years later, I met John Stormer. He became a friend. And with us this evening from Missouri is John Stormer. Hi, John.
Good evening, Stan. Good to be with you.
It's been, 48 years since that book came out? 49 years now.
Yes, I believe about that time.
Well, let's get your rundown on what's going on in the world today, because a lot of things have happened during the intervening years. Of course, you're 10 years after your book, None Dare Call It Treason, came out. Gary Allen came out with a book, I guess it was 8 years later, about 1972, called None Dare Call It Conspiracy, and really talked a lot more about the Council on Foreign Relations the following year. They formed the Trilateral Commission, so only got 87 members, North American chapter. But, of course, they dominate the Obama administrations. They dominate every administration. In fact, they just selected a member of that organization to become the new Secretary of State. His name is John Kerry. And all the discussions of John Kerry never mentioned he's a member of this subversive organization intent upon destroying the sovereignty of our nation and merging us into the one world government. But I'd like to get your thoughts. People know what I think. Tell us what you think about what's going on in the world and what is on your heart.
Well, things are not good. We were heading for some bad trouble when Men Dare Call It Treason was written back there in 1962, 63, 64, but things are a lot worse now in that just about everybody that has been Secretary of State since and other key positions have all been members of the CFR, and they have definite goals for merging us into a one-world government. In fact, some would say we're already there.
Well, we're well along the way. What people don't understand, ladies and gentlemen, is we have the mightiest military in the world. We put out certainly 40% of all the money that's spent on military is spent by the United States. and they're using our financial and military power to bring about a world government. Why do we have our troops all over the world? Why are we suddenly have troops in 130 nations, and now we're going to add troops in 35 more African nations? How is that going to defend America? It's not. It's going to bring about a world government. Our guest today is John Stormer. We're going to be back here in just a moment. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that nothing as it appears to be. The media is controlled, and that's why I do what I do and why John does what he does.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Stormer, author of the book None Dare Call It Treason, which was written about 50 years ago. And John, of course, eventually became a minister, but he's retired now, just like I am. But he's talking about what's going on in America and his concern over the issue of disarming the American people. And, of course, they are using the tragedy that took place at Sandy Hook School to justify taking weapons away from the American people. Now, the question is, was an assault rifle used at Sandy Hook? I really don't know, but I do know that certainly we've heard people who've gone back to Sandy Hook and talked to people there who've said that this is certainly blown out of all proportion. And, of course, if you go up on the Internet and type in YouTube, ABC, CBS, NBC, no assault rifle used, Sandy Hook. ABC, YouTube, ABC, CBS, NBC, no assault rifle used, the Sandy Hook. And you'll find out that all of the three major networks initially came out and said that the assault rifle was in the car that Adam Lanza had driven, but that he had used pistols. He did not use the assault rifles. So why are we told that we have to outlaw assault rifles, take them away from the American people, take away military weapons or military-style weapons or semi-automatic weapons or all weapons, because of what happened in Sandy Hook? What happened was a tragedy. Had there been anybody there with a rifle or with a pistol, they could have stopped the killer. But you see, the left-wing liberals had made that school and many schools gun-free zones. Nobody can bring a gun there except a criminal who wants to kill the children, and they're not going to abide by the law. But nobody wants to talk about that. Well, anyway, of course, John is saying, well, as we talk about what happened, certainly at Sandy Hook, about the importance, of gun legislation, we're missing something very, very important, and that is everything we do should be taken back to the Bible, and he's talking about what Jesus said, and was it Luke 22? John, you pick up the story there.
In Luke, and this is really the basis for the Second Amendment, going back 2,000 years ago. In Luke chapter 22, and verses 35 and 36, 37, the Lord Jesus told his disciples, now as you went out, you didn't have certain things and so forth, but now as you're going, you need to have a sword. And in fact, he said, not only do you need swords, but if you don't have a sword, you got to sell your clothes, sell your garments to get the money so that you can get a sword, because that's essential. And it's all there in the Bible. Now, I relate it to the Declaration of Independence, which is our basic foundational document. And in the Declaration of Independence, the Thomas Jefferson, who wrote it with some assistance, said that actually all of our rights come from our God, from the Creator. And then when they wrote the Constitution, I like to say, basically, the Declaration of Independence were our Articles of Incorporation, you might say. And the Declaration, and then the Constitution was just our bylaws implementing the provisions that were provided in the Declaration. And that's where the Constitution itself puts in the limitations for government, and then the Ten Amendments, our Bill of Rights, spell out how we protect those rights that came ultimately from God, going back to the Lord's position there when he sent his disciples out.
But, of course, the whole idea of the Bill of Rights was to limit the power of what the government could do. And
exactly.
Basically, before this, certainly, governments gave people rights. In America, why, we claimed our rights from God, and the people gave the government rights to do certain things, and they're listed in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. That's all a government can do. There are, I think, 18 things listed there that they can do, and they're to have nothing to do with religion. They're having nothing to do with guns. They're to be very limited in what they can do as far as searching your home or certainly monitoring what you do. Limit the power of government so men could be free. That was the very essence of America. And of course, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. And that was to protect the American people, not only from thieves, but to protect the American people from excesses of the government. They knew that. They feared government. They knew government would one day be used against the people. And that's why we have a Second Amendment. But nobody talks about that in the media today, because the media is controlled. It's controlled by the people tie into the Council on Foreign Relations. 90% of the media in America is tightly controlled, so we will never know what's really going on. Go right ahead, John.
And I wonder how many people who have been in church in recent weeks have heard a preacher speak up and say, by the way, you know where that Second Amendment comes from? And take them back to Luke chapter 22, verses, and it becomes very clear that the Lord said that we have our rights to be armed. And if we don't have that today, it would be if we don't have a gun, we need to give up anything else we have so that we can go out and buy a weapon to protect ourselves. But this is a part of the discussion. So, Brother Dr. Stan, there's just so many areas today that people hear things and they get all emotional, but they don't get back to the basics. And, you know, I've written, you mentioned my book, None Dare Call It Treason, and another one that I think you've had available, Betrayed by the Bench.
Yes, we've carried that. I hope we still carry it. But that was a very important book going into the Supreme Court and how it has violated its oath to uphold the Constitution. The Supreme Court, they put people onto the Supreme Court so they could justify increasing power with government. People who weren't interpreting the Constitution, but who wanted to be, were part and parcel of this whole movement towards the authoritarian society and to the control of the ruling elite. Go ahead.
It's another of the good books that, because it details the provisions for our rights and how they're to be protected, and put a block in allowing these judges and these law professors and the rest to they just do not spell out for the reader. And kids are taught in school today that, I've just been outraged this week. There's a professor at Georgetown University who says, we got to get rid of our Constitution. It's all out of date. It was written by a bunch of old white men, and we got to get rid of it because it limits what we can do. Well, that's what the Declaration and what the Constitution were written for, to limit what government can do to us.
And, of course, if he doesn't like the Constitution, he should lead a drive to amend the Constitution or to repeal the Constitution. But, you see, they don't want to amend the Constitution because they know the vast majority of the American people want to be free. And so, basically, they simply circumvent it. They put their people into key positions and in the judicial system.
And now there's pressure underway, including even a few good people say, we got to have another constitutional convention. But they don't realize that who would be in the constitutional convention if that was implemented, number one. And number two, they could go ahead and write a constitution totally eliminating all of these rights that we have. And it could just be a runaway thing.
And that would be the end of America. America is what it is, have nothing to do with purple mountains, majesty, and fields of waving grain. It has to do with a constitution that was drawn up by Christians who feared the power of government and wanted to be men to be free, because that's what they felt that God wanted. America was founded as a Christian country, despite what everybody says. That's not it, basically, they're all lying. The last thing they want is to know people to understand that the vast majority of the people in the who signed the Declaration of Independence and who signed the Constitution were dedicated Christians who wanted to establish a place where men could be free because they knew where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. And there are people who don't want liberty. They want an elite to run this country, like that professor back there at Georgetown University. And the intellectual elite on our university campuses who think they know it's better for the rest of us, and they would simply hold us down with their foot on our necks. This is what it's about. We're moving towards a dictatorship, and the media is not going to tell you about the covert organizations, very real organizations that exist in America today, intent upon destroying what was once the land of the free.
This is why we're in real bad trouble today. Number one, because of what the schools of America have done over the last almost 100 years under John Dewey. And it wasn't done overnight. It's just a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit somewhere else. And then we blame the schools, but I also turn the thing around to say the failure of our churches to awaken the American people to what the schools had been doing. And the combination of those things have brought us to where we have an unformed America.
Well, let me just interrupt you there, John. If you'd like to call and talk to John on this subject of America and our Constitution and gun confiscation, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295 here in the central part of California.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now. 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this evening, John Stormer. And John simply saying that he is very, very worried about what's going on in America today. Because, of course, if we try to cut back on all these wonderful welfare programs, today, ladies and gentlemen, we have almost 150 million Americans on one sort of government stipend or another. Certainly, we have 100 million people on Medicare and Medicaid. And, of course, we have the people on Social Security. Of course, we have a lot of people on both of them. But I've calculated somewhere close to 150 million people. A lot of them are retired. A lot of them paid in their whole life into Social Security. But, of course, that money was stolen long ago. There isn't any money in the Social Security fund. Are they having to go out and borrow the money? It's really a Ponzi scheme. The money that comes in goes out.
We've reached the point where who is going to loan us the money?
Right. Well, basically, the Federal Reserve System is lending 70 to 80% of all the money that the Treasury borrows, because other people throughout the world will not lend us the money. Now, sometimes we give the money to other central banks so that they can buy our debt up. But it's all coming from the United States. People don't understand that we're a bankrupt nation. We're bankrupt financially, but we're also bankrupt morally. John was just saying that he lived in St. Louis for many years. 70% of all the children born in St. Louis were born out of wedlock. When, of course, as soon as the child is born, then the mother can sign up for free medical care. The mother can sign up for food stamps. All the benefits that come, when you have an illegitimate child. 70% of the children in St. Louis, born out of wedlock, and certainly
40% nationwide.
Right.
That are born out of wedlock today.
And so we are no longer a moral country, and certainly half of our Christian marriages end up in divorce. What does that say about the effect of the Christian church in America today?
We're in bad trouble.
Well, I think that people must understand these things didn't happen by accident. They happened because there are a small group of people who've taken over the movie industry, and they use the movie industry certainly to destroy the morality of our country. They've bought up all the publishers and most of the publishing houses. I mean, 95% of the publishing houses are run by a small group of corporations, and they're using that to undermine the fabric of our society. Certainly, the same thing is true as far as our newspapers, our television. Certainly, there are six major corporations that control 90% of the American media. That's covered in a book called The Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdikian. And, of course, we will actually be carrying that book very, very shortly. We think it's vitally important that you understand what's really going on. The media is controlled, and certainly the educational system is controlled, and most people really don't understand what's going on. Well, if you have a question for our guest today, John Stormer, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. John, what can people do? What's the solution for this great country that you and I were both born in that no longer exists? How are we ever going to be able to return to a free society?
Well, I think the only hope for us would be if we would come to, well, some would say if the Lord would intervene. And when I look at the 50 million aborted babies, same-sex marriages, and all these other things that are going on, maybe where we are today is a judgment from God on how far we've gone. But if we get hurt, And we mentioned about the Federal Reserve and printing money and all the rest, we're going to see runaway inflation. And if people get really hurt enough that they might decide to turn to God, go back to see how we were founded, there could be a hope. We get back in our history, in the 30 years before the Declaration of Independence, people were hurting. But God raised up a couple of men, and they preached, Wesley and some others, and this nation was turned upside down in about 30 years, and laid the foundation for where we are.
And it was known as the Great Spiritual Revival. Most people never heard of it, 1730, and that was really what led to the foundation of America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. America was founded by Christians as a Christian nation, as a nation where men could be free. And that is, of course, why the evil people suddenly put their people onto the Supreme Court. The Masons controlled the Supreme Court from 1941 to 1971 in majorities of 5-4 to 8-9. And they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And nobody will ever tell the American people that. The occult foundation of our demise as a free nation.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4-6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, John Stormer, author of None Dare Call It Treason, and in more recent years, Betrayed by the Bench. And certainly, John, like myself, is retired. He's moved out of St. Louis, where he'd had a church for many, many years, because he feels that certainly we're moving towards a time of uncertainty in our major cities. And, of course, basically, you get out sometimes in the farming areas, periphery. Why, of course, you get people who have more contact with the reality. Unfortunately, we have so many people in our cities today that think the government owes them something. And if those things are shut off, why, we will have chaos in America. Just like we have chaos, we've created chaos over in Egypt today. The whole structure of Egypt, now that we toppled Mubarak and brought in Mr. Morsi, who incidentally was trained at the University of Southern California, and we've installed over there a new dictator in Egypt. Of course, he is a radical Muslim. Now they're under Sharia law. They weren't before. At least the Christians could live in Egypt under Mubarak. They can't live in Christians in Egypt today under Morsi. trained here at the University of Southern California. But any under any circumstances, if you have a question or comment for our guest, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But the tempo of violence is picking up in America. We've lost the moral foundation that once made us the envy of the world. At one time, we were a moral people, and crime was really not a major problem. But increasingly, as we've encouraged people to come in from other countries with different cultures and certainly in no sense of dependence upon God, or removing from a stable, prosperous country to being an increasingly unstable and violent country. Go right ahead, John. Certainly,
Stan, you mentioned, it brings us to another real aspect of the problem. You mentioned the bringing in of many from other nations that have no basis. Actually, when we really look at what's happened in America over the last a good many years, we have been and we are being invaded by people from the Muslim nations. And a study was done. I'm trying to pull together a lot of it, but in 1993, there was a government study. There was a case taken to court, and they detailed and introduced into that case the plans that had been developed by the Muslim Brotherhood for taking over the United States. It was called the process of integration, of bringing in people, and they have gone every major college in America, for example, has very key Muslim professors. The medical profession, we're getting all sorts of doctors and dentists and so forth.
Is a lot of this being financed by the Saudis?
Well, I think a lot of it has been. Across our nation, for example, there's all sorts of little 7-Eleven stores. Almost all of them are being run by Muslims. Now, where'd they get the money to integrate this whole area? A whole lot of it, I think, and there aren't real investigations being done, but I think there's a whole lot of money that is coming from Saudi America. As we buy our gas from them, and very definite efforts are made by people in Washington and others to keep us from becoming energy independent. We're destroying America in that way. And you put all these things together, and so many of the churches, now there are churches in the more liberal churches, are having joint services with Muslims. And across America, there are hundreds of Muslim-owned schools. There's a fella up in New Hampshire. He's from Turkey. He was run out of Turkey, actually.
Is that Gulen, G-U-L-L-E-N? Right.
That's right. You named it. And he has hundreds of schools in America in which they're indoctrinating young Americans. Now, they're not making Muslims out of them directly, but they're getting them to open the doors to all these other people. And we're being invaded through the process of integration and the process filling our country with groups of people that they're nice people, and they work to make friends and to break down the realization that a true Muslim in the Quran, their goal is to destroy Christianity, destroy Israel. And between the two, they'll end up taking control. And so these things are being done. They're more and more now in Missouri, for example, in our last election, into our state legislature, we've elected a couple of Muslims. We have a Muslim or so that have been elected into Congress, and they're taking control in the Detroit area, for example. There are certain sections up there that have got total control, and they influence the police, they influence other things, and we're setting ourselves up, much of it without any realization that we're being taken over.
No, I don't think the average individual believes that this could really happen. But we're dealing step by step by step. And of course, this is being fostered by some of our leaders who are not themselves Muslims, but who have an intense hatred for America and for everything we stand for, because America was a Christian nation and these people hate Christianity. And this is really what it's all about. This is a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. But certainly Christianity and the Muslim faith are incompatible, because we worship an entirely different God.
That's exactly right. And most people, of course, one of the big problems is that 85% of Americans say they're Christians, but most aren't going to church. There's all sorts of mixed up views as to what a Christian is. And as a result of it, we're being weakened and we've lost the sense. Now, there's never been, you mentioned we were founded as a Christian nation. Most of these people were Christian. You go back and see, in most cases, these people weren't Christians. But the ones who were Christians established Christian values in the country, so that the morality of the country in those early years, the first, I'd say, 100 years, Christian values set the standards and established the culture in our country, even though people maybe weren't born again or the other things of being a real Christian, but they accepted Christian values and lived by them, and that established the culture in our country. And as a result, they accepted Christianity in the schools, prayer, and all those other things. And one by one, the Supreme Court has taken these things away, and put a stop, and we're 50 years into that, and as a result, people don't see the importance of Christian values, the Christian culture.
And, you know, it's really so interesting. I was thinking just the other day, you know, we used to have Christmas programs at our churches. Well, we can't have Christmas programs at our churches. We can have holiday programs, but we can't have Christians. We can't mention Christianity. And yet, Christmas is a federal holiday. It's a legal holiday, and it's celebrating Christmas, knows certainly the birth of our Lord Jesus Christ. But we couldn't have that in schools. Oh, my goodness, our children might end up having some moral values that they might actually
have. A school can't have a Christmas program anymore.
Sure.
They have a holiday program.
Right. And ladies and gentlemen, if that's true, then why do we celebrate Christmas as a national holiday? Well, of course, they can't destroy it all at once. You go back to the Supreme Court building and you sit there, as I have, where the Supreme Court justices sit, and up above them and the relief above them, chiseled in the marble there is the Ten Commandments and all things about Christianity. The Ten Commandments are posted on the wall of the door of the Supreme Court where you go into the Supreme Court justices sit, but they cannot have the Ten Commandments in our schools. People don't understand. There's no wall of separation between church and state. There is a conspiracy against God, and they're doing a pretty good job with it.
I had a friend who, he's gone now. He's gone in the last year, tragically. But all the friends he had were Christians. And he took a stand, although he didn't take the final step that I and others tried to bring him to see. But he saw the basis of America. He paid for a number of years to put up billboards over the town that he lived in. And the billboard said, if you can't say Merry Christmas, don't you dare to take the day off.
Very well put. Hey, well, let's see. We've got Bruce calling us from all places, Durand, Michigan. Hi, Durand. Hi, Bruce. Hi. Do you have a question for us?
Yeah, I wonder. I'd like to thank Mr. Stormer for his book. I still have None Dare Call It Treason. I think the copyright is like 65 on it, 64.
64
like
or earlier.
It's an old book.
Well,
yeah. Anyway,
I can't hear what he's saying. Maybe you can repeat what he's saying.
I will. Go right ahead, Bruce, and then I'll translate. Go ahead.
Well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the culture rot, or did conspirators cause the culture to become worse?
All right, fine. The question
like prayer
is,
in school.
Did prayer, John, is which came first? Did the society rot, or did the conspirators destroy us, the foundation?
Well, the conspirators have worked to destroy it and have influenced the courts, for example, and these other things. And Hollywood has had its part in transforming the culture of America. And so there's a whole bunch of different factors involved, and you put them all together, and they would happen a little bit at a time, and people would kind of laugh, pass it by. But it's gotten us into the deep trouble that we're in today.
Well, Bruce, I really believe there's an organized effort. There's a wonderful book. It was written back in 1958. It's called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It's based upon the Reese Committee investigation of the great tax-exempt foundations, and their conclusion was they were basically doing everything they could to destroy the moral and the religious infrastructure of our society and to bring about a Marxist society. Foundations, Their Power and Influence, we kept that in
print. Excellent book.
Excellent. And so, Bruce, I think that there is a conspiracy, but of course it's a conspiracy against God. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. None of this makes sense unless you understand there are powerful spiritual forces that are energizing these people of great wealth and the foundations and all of these people who are trying to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Anything else, Bruce?
Yeah, I wish they would make logic mandatory. And even grade school, junior high, and high school. If people would just think logically, they'd be compelled to conclude something's wrong. Either the culture is wrong to elect people like, let's say, is the Dianne Feinstein a representative, a true representative of the people of California? Like in our state here, is Carl Levin a true representative? I never voted for him. I don't know people who would vote for him. Or did they game the system? And somehow they keep on getting reelected. I just saw yesterday on the, I think it was the NewsHour, PBS NewsHour, that more than 50% of the people are dissatisfied with their representatives, and yet more than 50% of the representatives keep getting reelected.
Well, let's ask John. Basically, John, why do these people keep getting reelected? Does Barbara Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein represent the people of California? Does Carl Levin represent the people of Michigan? Or is the system gamed? Sometimes do they actually falsify the votes? What are your thoughts?
Well, there's a couple of factors. First of all, there's a lot of stupid people out there who still get to vote. But secondly, there's pretty good indications that the last election, Ohio, there were well, Philadelphia, for example, there were a number of precincts there where there were no Republican votes counted at all. And you put those all together in key states, and there is a real question as to whether or not that election was stolen.
And I really believe the election was stolen, and immediately after the election, they brought up something they'd known for 6 months, and that was General Petraeus's affair with his mistress, and that was simply a diversion.
Yeah,
and all
right.
We heard about for weeks after the election was General Petraeus. No one was allowed to point out the fact that there were precincts in Pennsylvania and in Ohio where more people voted for Obama than there were actually people there. Bruce, we're going to have to let you go. We're about out of time, but thanks so much for calling. And John, our guest has been John Stormer. John, do you have a telephone number, a web page, or anything you'd like to get out for our listeners?
My web page is jstormer@centurylink.net.
One more time, please.
jstormer@centurylink.net.
And because John's certainly one of my favorite writers, he still writes essays from time to time. You certainly will be well, certainly worth your time to go to his website, get John Stormer's material. One of the great patriots about modern times, and certainly a man that I've certainly turned to many times, looking for his opinions and thoughts. And again, John Stormer will be back in just a moment here to wrap up tonight's program.
It's great to be with you, Dr. Sam.
You already know that calcium is important, but did you know that calcium cannot be absorbed without magnesium? That's a fact, and the calcium that isn't absorbed calcifies your soft muscle tissues. Haven't you ever wondered what's really causing all your muscle aches? I'm Pat Sullivan, the founder of Jigsaw Health. I created Jigsaw Magnesium with SRT to solve my own magnesium deficiency problems. You see, magnesium helps people feel younger because magnesium keeps the soft tissues from calcifying. This helps you sleep better at night and feel more energized during the day. Call 888-352-5050 and we'll explain why Jigsaw Magnesium with sustained release technology is so much better than any drugstore magnesium supplement. Mention this radio ad and receive $5 off your order. 888-352-5050, jigsawmagnesium.com.
What has happened to the judicial system in these United States? From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we've seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. The judicial system was designed to ensure that the laws of the land were just and constrained by our Constitution. Now judges have immunity and cannot be prosecuted when they act outside the law. This must stop. The judicial branch needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. At that website, you can find out what's really going on in this area of lawlessness, and more importantly, you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. JudicialReformNow.com. JudicialReformNow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
I was just saying, we've got to get people to learn to ask questions. Don't go out and lecture people. Ask them, why these things go on. And there's so many unexplainable things, and they can only understand them when you understand there's a vast conspiracy against God. And there are people who hate God, and this is the very essence of what we're up against. John, thanks very much for being with us. It's been a great program.
Thank you, Dr. Stone.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. That was John Stormer. Certainly a personal friend, a man I just proud to know. Now, basically, what sort of questions would you ask people? Well, you might ask him, why do you think the Israeli government gave back 1,000 terrorists, released 1,000 terrorists, over 400 of them were murderers? Why would they release 1,000 terrorists to get back one Israeli prisoner, a soldier who had been captured by the Palestinian terrorists? Why would you release 1,000 terrorists to get back one soldier? Well, very simply, because, of course, if you didn't release them, you wouldn't have anybody to fight. This whole war on terrorists certainly is artificial. It's all as phony as a $3 bill. If there's really a war on terrorism, why don't they come across our southern border? They could come across very easily. Anybody can come across the border. They could bring explosives with them. Why don't we have massive explosions at our football games, in our malls, certainly at public gatherings? The reason we don't is the war on terrorism is totally phony. It's all contrived. It's smoke and mirrors. We've had just a handful of real incidents. And most of it has been orchestrated and controlled by our FBI. Financed many instances where they've actually paid people to become involved in these terrorist activities. And once they've agreed to go along with it, then they're arrested and tried. And I don't have any sympathy for them. But understand, ladies and gentlemen, reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. Well, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help so we can continue on our 50 stations. I have I got an offer today for another 12 stations we could do, certainly every week. But of course, we have to raise the funds for it. We depend upon you if you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or if you can certainly buy a case of my books. And certainly they're at a very, very good price, 64 books, less than $2.40 each. But you can use those books to educate others. And if you'd like to get a case of Brotherhood of Darkness or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Now I'd like to mention we still have copies of John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason. We have his book, Betrayed by the Bench. And, of course, John was just saying, you know, that this whole thing about America not having adequate energy, not having adequate oil, which is why, of course, we have to finance the Saudis, so the Saudis can finance the revolutionaries all throughout the world, pushing the radical Muslim faith, because we're creating the best enemy money can buy. But there's never been a shortage of energy here in America. Right now, they've suddenly decided, my goodness, there's some oil up on the north slope of Alaska. Can you believe that? Ladies and gentlemen, we have Lindsay Williams' book, None Dare, The Energy Non-Crisis. The Energy Non-Crisis. We have a great DVD of Lindsay Williams telling this story when he came here to visit us a few years ago as a speaker at our annual conference. You need to get that information. You need to get the book, The Energy Non-Crisis, the DVD, The Energy Non-Crisis. We have a four CD set on oil. This whole oil shortage is contrived so we can justify shipping money to the Saudis so they can finance the terrorist movement that threatens America today. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. And if you're listening to us, remember, you can go there. You can listen to our programs on the satellite, certainly 9 hours a day on the archive programs, 24 hours a day. Encourage others to listen, to understand what's going on. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Let us all be grateful for a land for
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And remember, the media is controlled in America. That was the first and most important thing they did, was to buy up most of the major publishing houses and newspapers and television chains so that they could control our reality. And they've done an excellent job of it. But this is why I do what I do, and Alex Jones and Joyce Riley and Butch Paw and Sean Leffler and Noah Hutchings and a myriad of others are out there on the front lines, and now there's increasingly television programs and certainly on the internet that you can get and watch, learn how you can trust, and then of course go and get their material and then help us spread it out, and your job is to talk to others. Well, this evening, for the second hour, as we always do at this time, the Friday evening, we'll have William Grigg. And William Grigg was the former editor of the New American Magazine. He was the former editor of the Republic Magazine, not the New Republic, but the Republic for a time. And then, of course, he is certainly at the present time. He writes for Lou Rockwell, and you certainly can see his articles up there frequently. He has his own blog and website where he's certainly writing and trying to express his views. He's one of the most articulate spokesmen we have within the conservative movement, William Grigg. And so hopefully we'll have William with us in just a moment. But in the meantime, until we get him here, we certainly want to comment upon some of the things that are happening. This effort to disarm the American people to justify taking away our weapons so that we will be totally helpless. Ladies and gentlemen, we need weapons to protect our families because we're living in an increasingly lawless society because they've taken God and prayer and the Ten Commandments and right and wrong and morality out of our schools and out of our entertainment and out of Hollywood and out of our books and out of our newspapers and magazines. We need, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to say it, but we need weapons to protect ourselves. Because remember, why, of course, the police are just a few minutes away, but of course, you may only be seconds away from death. You need to have a weapon in your home. You need to know how to use it. You need to know how to keep it safe. But we need to be protected. And had there been one person with a gun there at the Sandy Hook Elementary School there the day the shooter came in, why, of course, those children, the 20 children, would not be dead. Nobody wants to talk about the fact we need to have the right to keep and carry concealed weapons. And basically, in the areas where they have the right to keep and carry concealed weapons, the incidence of crime and murder and violence plummets. The incidence of crime and murder and violence plummets. If you go into the county, it's just across the river from Washington, D.C., that has one of the largest crime waves in the world. I think it's called Fairfax County. I'm not certain, but it's a county of 1 million people. There, it's in Virginia, and in that county of 1 million people, the murder rate is 0.4 per 100,000, 0.4 per 100,000 per year, infinitesimally low. You go across the bridge into suddenly into Washington, D.C., it'll be almost 50 times that, and they have the strictest gun control laws anywhere in the nation. Well, let's go to William Grigg. Hi, William. How are you doing tonight, and what are we going to be talking about?
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you, and I do think that what you say in terms of laying out our predicament is perspicuous, as always. I think that we're dealing not with the lack of morality, but with perverted amorality, and that's one of the reasons why we're surrounded by violence. We find our society in such a peril, because of the enthronement of evil in the place of good.
And what we need, of course, is to have people who know right and wrong, that murder is wrong, and that there is a judgment. And if we violate God's law, then one day, even if we escape in this earth, we'll stand before God for judgment. William, you go right ahead.
Judgment Day is coming, of course, and one of the things that happens is that there are, if you will, foreshadowings of judgment when our Creator allows us to get what it is we have chosen. He's funny that way. He has a way of standing back and letting us revel in whatever it is that we have chosen as the honest desires of our heart. It was true in ancient Israel when they wanted to have a king rather than being ruled by divine law without the intermediating and subversive influence of a terrestrial government along the Babylonian model. And it's true today. Unfortunately, I think that the plurality of our society, perhaps not the majority, but the plurality, the active, organized, influential plurality, has opted to organize society as if our Creator didn't exist and as if natural law didn't exist. And now, rather than having a society that is rooted in the permanent things, the good, the true, and the beautiful, we have a society based on the sensate urges of the flesh. It's thoroughly materialistic. It's utterly cynical. And the official cult, the official religion of our society is the worship of collective human power. And that, once again, is Babylonian. That's the ideal represented by the tower that Nimrod was going to build, the first public works project, if you will. And its purpose was to help stimulate an economy that would be administered by a ruler who would be the provider of all good things. So every time somebody looks to Washington, looks to the figure of the dear leader as the benevolent and omnipotent influence in our lives, they're really bowing the knee to Baal. They're paying fealty to the Babylonian religion. And it's not as if this is something that we fully see on the so-called political left when you have the predictable and metronomically predictable changing of hands. You have the other leftist party in power. Then you have a different constituency that is being treated. And other people, of course, are locked out of the equation. And so they end up coveting the power that they have lost. And the others, of course, are reveling in their sense of unearned accomplishment because they're now at the steering wheel, or so they think, of the entire mechanism, when actually it's all just this age-old, disreputable, and familiar dialectic. And we're seeing that happen right now, Dr. Stan, with respect to the civilian disarmament issue. I want people to understand here that this is a controlled debate. I don't know whether there are going to be new legislative measures passed. I suspect that there will be. Right now, the odds makers are saying that the opposition of the gun lobby will be insurmountable. I don't think that's the case. I don't have a whole lot of trust in the NRA.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William Grigg is just saying that right now you read the newspapers, they say, oh, well, they're never going to get through all these gun laws. We got nothing to worry about, ladies and gentlemen. Just go back to sleep. And ladies and gentlemen, do not go back to sleep. You need to be calling and emailing and faxing your elected representatives and everybody else you know and letting them know certainly what they're trying to do, ladies and gentlemen. They keep telling us over and over again, there's nothing to worry about, there's nothing to worry about. Well, as William Grigg has said, he doesn't trust the NRA, and I don't trust the NRA. I've watched them too often. The Gun Owners of America is a different situation. Yeah. Larry Pratt's a personal friend. Organizer of that was Bill Richardson, who I've known for over 50 long years. He's always been a man of integrity, but the NRA certainly has been infiltrated by the people on the other side. We play the game good cop, bad cop, but it's all a game. Do not sit back on your laurels. Do not believe what they're telling you. There's nothing to worry about. There's everything to worry about, and you need to be involved. Do not believe what they say in the papers, what they say in the magazines, what they say on television. Nothing to worry about. Don't do anything. They're not going to have the votes. Ladies and gentlemen, they're going to have those votes unless you're involved. Go right ahead, William.
Yeah, and the other thing that we should pay attention to with respect to the way that this whole conversation is being rigged is the fact that the NRA has always been the indispensable dialectical foil for the consolidation of power at the federal level where law enforcement is concerned. Every time you have a controversy of this kind erupt, the NRA, most recently, of course, in the person of Wayne LaPierre, will go before the mics at a press conference or in a congressional hearing or Senate hearing, as it did the other day, and lament the fact that the federal government is not zealously enforcing all of the myriad unconstitutional gun laws that are already on the books. none of those laws is legitimate because the federal government not only does not have the constitutional authority to legislate regarding firearms, it is specifically and explicitly prohibited from doing so. That's the point of the Second Amendment. There can be restrictive gun laws at the state and local level. It's a horrible idea, and it's something that I would not countenance, nor would I put up with it. But the point is that those reserve powers do exist, but the federal government is specifically forbidden to infringe upon that issue. It cannot use its delegated powers in a way that will infringe upon the issue. The way the Second Amendment is written doesn't refer merely to legislation that would impose upon the right to bear arms. It also addresses the use of other powers, such as those pursuant to the Commerce Clause, that would infringe upon that right. It is a full spectrum and unambiguous and comprehensive and plenary prohibition on the federal government from being involved in this issue. Yet there are literally hundreds of laws that have to do with firearms that the federal government enforces. All of them are utterly illegitimate, and yet every single time we have the proposal to expand this unconstitutional practice, there will be Wayne LaPierre hitting that one note on the keyboard saying, why don't you enforce the laws that are already on the books?
Instead of saying those are laws you have on the books are unconstitutional,
exactly,
and you have no right to do this. But he doesn't do that, ladies and gentlemen. He's playing his part, just like so many of the people do, like Senator McCain plays his part, and Hillary Clinton plays her part, and Barack Obama plays his part. They're all actors, ladies and gentlemen. They're recruited, you know, to very powerful and profitable positions. After all, Barack Obama has recently bought a $35 million estate in Hawaii. Where do you think he got $35 million to buy an estate in Hawaii? I mean, basically, he's never had a full-time job. I mean, he's certainly been a social organizer all this time. Well, unless he's making a little money on the side there, you know, as a senator and now as the president of the United States, where did he get the money? And nobody ever asked that. And isn't it amazing that all of the reporters in all of the country this size, nobody's ever asking, where did he get $35 million? Go right ahead.
It's interesting. This is somebody who's still being presented to the public as the tribune of the working class and the paladin of the poor. And he finds himself, of course, immersed in luxury, the likes of which would have struck the ancient pharaohs as unimaginable. And that's entirely typical of the political class's ruling us, the people who want us to be disarmed and entirely at their mercy. To the extent that this fellow has had an occupation, it has consisted in organizing what he called coalitions of power to bring about what he called, once again in his words, redistributive change. And of course, rendered into clear English from dialectical Marxist, what he's talking about is communism. He's talking about the consolidation of power centrally and the use of government to reallocate wealth according to an ideological design.
But I think what people really don't understand is this is not the redistribution of wealth to the poor. Basically, of course, what communism really is,
yes,
is a centralization of power with a different ruling elite. You get rid of one ruling elite, and you bring in another ruling elite. And nobody ever wants to point out that socialism is simply a means of destroying the foundations of our Constitution, centralizing power with Washington, D.C., and then, of course, the people who buy and sell our politicians are the ones who control our government, and we have a new ruling class, a new ruling oligarchy, and nobody wants to say that. We do have a ruling oligarchy, and now Barack Hussein Obama has been well rewarded for his service to them. A brand new estate over there in Hawaii, supposedly some people say it cost even more than $35 million. But, you know, whether it's $35 million or $42 million, who really cares? Go right ahead.
All the premises that we're talking about now, of course, are socialist. They're all redistributivist. They all posit the idea that the natural and morally appropriate role for the government is to control the economy and to reallocate resources in a way that would meet with the approval of the supervisory elite. And as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, socialism does not make the poor wealthier. It makes the wealthy poorer, and it confiscates that wealth and puts it at the disposal of this elite, this entrenched elite, to use the Soviet term, the nomenklatura. We have a vast and expanding nomenklatura of whom Mr. Obama would be entirely typical. I was forced to endure about an hour and a half of exposure to MSNBC today, MSNBC is the heraldic chorus for Barack Obama's regime, just as Fox News served that role for the regime of George W. Bush. One of the panel discussions involved a couple of kennel-fed house economists, the type of courtiers that you would find in any regime constituted like the one ruling us. And they were talking about the most recent economic figures. They said we have to wait until they've been suitably revised to know what's really going on. In real time, in other words, these people were talking about what Orwell called the rectification of news coming from the Ministry of Truth. There was there were some indications that there was a retrenchment in the economy, that in the last quarter the economy actually contracted. Now, that didn't comport with the party line, which tells us that thanks to the heroic and benevolent efforts of the dear leader and his entourage, that the financial stimulus has prevailed and that we're seeing a recovery underway. Well, of course, you don't have a recovery if the economy is contracting. So they said we have to wait until the figures have been revised. In other words, we can't pronounce upon that until the ruling elite, until the party has told us what the new reality would be. But the other part of this conversation I found really interesting is that both of them were talking about the supposed fact that there had been a reduction in government spending in the last quarter, which is not true, of course. There had been perhaps a modest reduction in the rate of growth, but the government portion of the economy grew. But both of them talked about the idea of how terrible it would be if the sequestration took place and you were actually cutting government spending, because that would be extracting money from the economy. I turned to Corinne, my wife, and I said, are you following what they're saying here? Are you taking note of the embedded assumption here that the government and the economy are the same thing, that the economy is entirely run by the government, that the government manages the entire economy? And if you allow people in the productive sector, what's left of it, to keep what they have earned and what they have saved, rather than allowing the government to confiscate it and use it as it sees fit, that's extracting money from the economy. Of course, exactly the opposite is true. If you cut the size of government, and the real price of government is not our tax bill, it's the amount of money the government spends, because that money, of course, is created through inflation, and that is a tax. That's the extraction of the value of the money that we earn and the money that we save. If you take money out of the so-called public sector, I call it the parasitical sector, and allow it to stay in the hands of the productive, that actually increases the size of the economy. But that's not how these people look at it, and that's not how the public is supposed to look at it. We're supposed to believe that somehow the government creates wealth, and that if we are not allowing the government to spend everything that it wants to, borrowing it from China if necessary, or simply ex-nihilating it by way of the printing press, the Federal Reserve, if we do not allow them to do this, to work their dark arts of magical alchemy, whereby they somehow create wealth out of the raw material of political will, that the economy is going to contract. And, of course, I don't think that that was something that was widely believed in Moscow as long ago, perhaps, as the 1930s. I don't think anybody in Stalin's Soviet Union really believed what they were being fed by the central regime. And certainly by the time the Brezhnev rolled around to the 1960s and the Soviet Union, as we understood it, and, of course, there's a big conversation that should be had about what happened after 1991 in terms of continuity and change in the former Soviet Union. But by the time that Brezhnev and his clack were running things in the Soviet Union, there weren't maybe more than a half a dozen or so believing Marxists in Moscow. But you have people in the United States today who are not living in the shadow of the Gulag in the same sense anyway that residents of the Soviet Union did, who credulously and earnestly repeat all of these communist talking points on MSNBC and other news outlets, and we're supposed to take them at face value as if they're dispensing truth that's worthy of our attention. And it's not getting any better. And with respect to the gulags, we can see the lineaments of gulag state taking place, or taking form all around us. And that's something that needs to be addressed as well in the context of the efforts of our rulers to disarm us. There's no reason why they'd want to do that unless they intend to work their evil will upon us in ways that would be horrifying.
Absolutely. And you know, certainly, basically, you know, they're not talking about disarming the police. They're not talking about disarming the guards who guard Barack Hussein's daughters. Apparently, there are 11 guards who guard his two daughters when they go to school. Why don't they simply declare it a gun-free zone and simply take away all the weapons and send all the guards home? Would its children be safer? Go right ahead.
You know, it's interesting, the disjunction between what the elite is entitled to and what the rest of us are told to put up with. The so-called Department of Homeland Security has put out a training video, which is being used to educate people in executive high-rise jobs. Those few people who are still in white-collar jobs, people in schools and other environments of that sort, what to do in the event that they're dealing with an active shooter scenario. And the advice is to go and run and hide, or if all else fails, to improvise a weapon, perhaps using scissors as an edged weapon, or using office equipment of some heft as a blunt force weapon. And of course, in all of this, the assumption is that we are best left disarmed, that we are best left helpless in a situation where a deranged individual with a firearm is menacing our lives, that we simply cannot be allowed to entertain, even for a transient second, the idea that we would be better off having firearms in order to deal with the threat of an armed, deranged individual. That's what the Department of Homeland Security is saying for those of us who belong to what I call the mundane class. Those in the exalted elite, however, people like Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Schumer, have had concealed carry licenses, and they are surrounded by grim-faced men with lapel mics and curly wires coming out of their ears who are packing all kinds of high-performance weaponry. And that's because they're so much more important than we are, because they're part of that caste that has assigned to themselves a monopoly on the legitimate use of force, which is also, once again, a communist, specifically a Leninist idea. And you can hear echoes of that assumption resonating through the public conversation that we're told to have about firearms. Barack Obama gave an interview to the New Republic magazine a couple of weeks ago that was nauseating in terms of the undisguised sycophancy of the so-called journalists, the stenographers really who interviewed him. But there were a couple of really interesting pieces in it, the first of which was that Obama claims that he goes skeet shooting regularly. And if that's true, I would probably have to be considered a man of Swedish ancestry. Anybody who's ever seen me knows I'm not a Swede. I'm dark-complexioned. I'm probably darker than Barack Obama is in terms of my skin color. I'm obviously not a Swede, but I would believe that if Barack Obama is a skeet shooter, I'll discover that my mother was a Swede. He is not a skeet shooter. He's, of course, a liar of singular shamelessness. But the point was, in talking about how he supposedly skeet shoots at Camp David with visiting guests from the elite, he went into some detail about how firearms have a lengthy and historically significant role in our culture with respect to hunting. And he spent a couple of sentences talking about how important it is to preserve this part of our heritage. Hunting is legitimate, only legitimate purpose for firearms. And that's exactly the same rhetoric that you heard issuing from Bill Clinton back in 1993 and 1994, and the same rhetoric that you hear issuing from Dianne Feinstein, who was involved in the so-called assault weapons ban back in the early 1990s as well. And just a couple of days before this was extruded from Mr. Obama's privileged pie hole, Bill Clinton was suggesting that he take that tack as well. He said that Obama must take care not to insult or denigrate the hunting culture in this country. Back in 1994, when the so-called assault weapons ban was being bruited about in Washington, I believe it was on April 19th of 1994. As a matter of fact, I know for certain that was when that speech was delivered by Bill Clinton. And as it happens, it was delivered in Chicago, where an obscure community organizer named Barack Obama was getting started in that career.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And, of course, our guest is William Grigg, and we're simply talking about the fact that there's a conscious effort now on the part of President Obama and ex-President Bill Clinton to say, yes, we really need to preserve the gun culture. We need to have rifles for hunting. Of course, we don't need semi-automatic rifles or rifles with big clips, certainly, but shotguns, certainly, we certainly want to preserve shotguns for skeet shooting. And, of course, Barack Obama claims he goes skeet shooting over there at Camp David with other dignitaries. And this really isn't true. He's very, very seldom goes skeet shooting. But it's all in an effort to identify himself with the average American. But, of course, the purpose for the Second Amendment was not the right to keep and bear arms for hunting. It was to protect the individual in America, to protect them from Indians, to protect them from the government, and to keep them in case of an invasion of their country. They wanted everybody to be armed so we would have the people could defend this country. And certainly in Switzerland today, because, of course, everybody, certainly of military age, certainly is, can be called up at any time. Why? Certainly everybody has a rifle and they keep their rifle at home. And they do this in Israel, and we should be doing it here in America. Go right ahead.
Hey, on the subject of the Indians, it's interesting. If one wants to understand the direction that we're going with respect to civilian disarmament in this country of the entire population, look what was done to the Indians. The Indians were permitted for a season to keep only those firearms that would be suitable for hunting. And then when they were shunted off onto these, I would have to call them proto-gulag type encampments called reservations. They were designed appropriately enough by a German communist expatriate by the name of Karl Schurz, who was the Secretary of the Interior at the time. His wife, by the way, invented the kindergarten program, which is something that shows the kinship between those institutions. But when the Indians were put on the reservations, they had to give up even the weapons that they would use for the purposes of hunting because they were considered to be excessively dangerous in terms of the risk that they would pose to the people who were their prison camp guards, their tenders. And that's what happened to Wounded Knee in 1890, is that the Lakota Sioux were being disarmed by the vengeful remnant of the 7th Cavalry. And so they were told that their rights to weaponry were limited to the means to carry out hunting, and that they were deprived even of that. And so you ended up with a situation, I think, that prefigures the way that the conversation is going to go today, but we're told that we would keep these weapons for the purposes of hunting and for other cultural undertakings, but eventually they will find some way of redefining that out of existence as well. In any case, back in 1994, April of 1994, Bill Clinton was at a development, I believe it was called the Robert Taylor Homes in Chicago. And this was April 19th of that year, a year anniversary of a particularly vigorous exercise in gun control that occurred at Mount Carmel just outside of Waco when the FBI murdered scores of people in cold blood. Actually, it's inappropriate to say in cold blood because they burned them to death. But on the anniversary
basically 20 of them had bullet holes in the back of their head. We're told they committed suicide by shooting. They all shot themselves in the back of the head. Isn't that interesting? Go ahead.
Exactly. There was a sort of a mixed approach to destroying that colony of people there who had really done no harm to anybody. But in the year anniversary of this, Mr. Clinton gave a speech talking about how they were going to be using warrantless weapon sweeps in that part of Chicago as a workaround the constitutional prohibitions and include the Second and Fourth Amendment. They were going to find ways around the Second and Fourth Amendment because when freedom is being abused, you have to move to limit it. That was the phrase that he used. And in that same speech, he talked about the then impending assault weapons ban. And he was saying that this is a really important thing to understand. He was saying, Mr. Clinton, that this would be the first time that there had been explicit legislative protection for the means to hunt. That's really interesting. In other words, not only was he saying that there was not a right to keep and bear arms for the purpose of individual offense, or for the purpose, quite frankly, of dealing with the criminal threat that could be posed to us by a rogue government, let alone, of course, a foreign invader, but rather that without legislative protection, we didn't even have the right to keep arms for the purpose of hunting. That was the rhetoric in 1994. We're hearing a reprise of that today as they're trying to reinstate the so-called assault weapons ban. And once they have done that, and I'm quite afraid that they will succeed, they're not going to stop there. They're going to treat us the way that they treated the Indians.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think it's so vitally important that the American people understand that all this talk about, you got nothing to worry about, they're never going to have enough votes. They're playing games with your mind, ladies and gentlemen. They're playing games with your mind. You get out, certainly, your computer. You get out your emails and faxes and letters and calls. We need to barrage Washington, D.C. If you care about freedom, we need an armed population because there are people who want to take our freedom.
While the storm clouds gather, far across.
Well, William, you go right ahead.
One of the things I think needs to be discussed here is the charade of the Senate hearing that took place a couple of days ago. And, of course, they had a heartrending and understandably heartrending appearance by Gabrielle Giffords, who had been wounded in that horrible shooting in Tucson in January of 2011. Then they also had a number of other witnesses from both sides, as we're told, of this so-called conversation, including the previously mentioned Wayne LaPierre. And one of the things that I have written about in reaction to that hearing was the fact that you had Gabrielle Giffords and her husband, both of whom are from the Tucson area, but we didn't hear from Vanessa Guarena. Who is Vanessa Guarena? She's also a Tucson resident, and her family was forever and unalterably changed by criminal violence involving firearms when her 26-year-old husband, the father of their two children, was savagely murdered in the living room of their home in Tucson by a SWAT team from the Pima County Sheriff's Office that was carrying out an early morning raid on the basis of a completely fraudulent and unconstitutional warrant as part of an investigation into a marijuana trafficking ring. The husband, Jose Guarena, was an honorably discharged Marine and a combat veteran of Iraq. I believe he served multiple tours there. He worked at a copper mine, and he had worked the graveyard shift the night before, which is the sort of thing he wouldn't have done if he were a drug kingpin. There's no reason why he'd be working a graveyard shift at a mine if he was bringing in a large bounty by selling marijuana. But they, that is the SWAT team, showed up, knocked timidly on the front door, then beat the door in, and Vanessa had seen them on the front yard. She had warned her husband there were men with guns outside. He put them in the closet of the living room, and he grabbed his legally registered AR-15, and he crouched to protect his family from the intruders. The SWAT team entered his home, and 11 seconds later, Jose Guarena had been perforated by 22 shots because the intruders had so-called assault weapons and large-capacity ammunition magazines of the sort that we're told are not suitable for civilian possession.
Hold that thought, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan and William simply talking about the testimony a few days ago in Washington, D.C. by Representative Giffords, who'd been shot in Tucson, Arizona, and it was an impassionate plea simply to take the arms away somehow if we disarm the American people, that they'd no longer be criminals with weapons. Ladies and gentlemen, if you disarm the American people, it'll be simply a shooting gallery for anybody who's dishonest and certainly has weapons. And they found this. They found this happened in Australia when they took the guns away from the law-abiding citizens, and what happened? The instances of gun crime increased. And this is exactly what happens. It's happened time and time and time again. You disarm the people, and the criminals now can do whatever they want to. Well, of course, William is talking then about the fact that when they have these hearings, they don't bring discussions on the other side. He was talking about another young man who'd been killed in his living room by a SWAT team that broke down his front door. They didn't wait. They knocked on the front door, and then they immediately broke it down. They came in with their weapons. He didn't know who they were. He had an AR-15. He was trying to protect his wife and children. He was not a drug user. He didn't know who these people were. And they, within 15 seconds of getting into the room, boy, they shot him over 20 times. Go right ahead.
That's exactly right. They shot him over 20 times, but because we're talking about police, their marksmanship was very poor, and none of the shots was lethal. None of the injuries that he sustained would have been lethal. And there was a field medic assigned to the SWAT team. As a matter of fact, I believe there was more than one. And that medic was legally and, of course, morally obliged to provide life-saving care. But rather than doing so, the SWAT team withdrew. They waited outside on the porch of the home, and Vanessa came out tearfully. She had been on the phone with 911 begging them to send help because she didn't know who these people were. A team of paramedics showed up within a few minutes, and they were turned away by the SWAT team. They grabbed Vanessa. They assaulted and injured her. She was taken and held under armed guard and interrogated without the benefit of counsel by a detective who obviously didn't know anything about that family or anything that would be found in the home. He asked her if there were guns, if there were drugs, if there were money, if there were monies, as he expressed himself. He's Are there monies in your home? These are the sort of questions that should have been answered before the warrant was exercised. The Fourth Amendment specifically states that you have to be looking for something in particular. There have to be specific items and specific people that you are going to search and or arrest. And none of this was in the search warrant. They didn't know what was in that house. All they knew was that Jose Guarena was related to suspects who were being investigated on suspicion of marijuana trafficking. So the warrant itself was entirely invalid, and Jose Guarena was not a criminal suspect. But they interrogated the wife at gunpoint without the benefit of counsel while her husband bled to death on the living room floor.
And they left him there for half an hour. Why didn't they take him to the hospital? They killed him.
Yeah.
They withheld medical care. In fact, my understanding was that the medic wanted to help him and wasn't allowed to.
Yes. This is an act that, by the most generous interpretation, is second-degree criminal homicide through depraved indifference. I would contend it's something worse than that. I don't think that it was mere indifference. I think you're dealing with second-degree murder, which is to say act of malice, because one of the SWAT troopers, one of the paramilitary goons responsible for this atrocity, said, according to the commander of the unit, who was debriefed later, that they should just finish what they started. And they weren't talking about rendering aid to a suspect. He was talking about going in and delivering a coup de grace. But rather than taking an active role in ensuring that Jose Guarena died, they allowed him to die through neglect over the course of a half hour or 45 minutes. And then they called a doctor who was off-site, and over a telephone, they had him pronounce him medically and legally dead, which, of course, is completely bogus because he wasn't there to inspect the victim. He wasn't there to examine the victim and see if there had been any effort to render aid, as they were morally and, once again, legally obliged to do. After turning away the SWAT team, of course, what they were doing is they were ensuring that he would be dead. While this was going on, Jose Jr., the four-year-old child, the young child of this family, was still in the closet while his dad was dying just feet away from him. And they didn't move to protect or to rescue that child because of their paralyzing fear of a potential threat to officer safety. And so they did send in a robot to poke and prod Jose or Jose's body. It's not clear at what point the robot was sent in. But rather than going and bringing the child out, the child had to wander through that living room. He saw the dead and bloodied body of his father on the living room floor. Meanwhile, of course, Vanessa's outside. Her leg had been injured. Her shoulder had been injured. She had been taken down and dragged out of her home by the people that assaulted her husband for over an hour. They prolonged the pretense that Jose was still alive. And finally, she was told that he had died. And she said, why? Why did you kill him? Why did you do this? It made no sense at all to her. Their six-year-old son, Joel, was at grade school when this occurred. And when he came back, he asked his mother, Mom, police killed my dad. Was he a bad man? Was he a bad guy? Is that why they killed him? And of course, he wasn't. He was an honorably discharged Marine, combat veteran of Iraq. He had no criminal record. He worked the graveyard shift at a copper mine to support his family. Later on, by way of trying to provide some ex post facto justification for this act of murder, the police union attorney said that they had found items in the home that were suspicious. He described a bulletproof vest, a number of firearms which were legally owned, and then what he called police gear. The police gear consisted of a Border Patrol cap, because Jose Guarena was thinking about enlisting in the Border Patrol. This is something that he wouldn't be interested in doing necessarily if he were the sort of a person they were describing him to be. Now, granted, there's a lot of corruption in the Border Patrol along the border between the United States and Mexico because of the insane policies regarding the war on drugs. But the fact that he had a Border Patrol cap just meant that he was looking into employment in law enforcement. And yet he was shot and allowed to die on the living room floor. Well, Vanessa Guarena is a widow. The four-year-old son, who was a witness to the death of his father, is now six. They should have been allowed to testify before the Senate hearing. Their emotional testimony would have had at least as much resonance and impact as that of Gabrielle Giffords. Admittedly, her testimony is a little more affecting because of the horrible thing that was done to her and the horrible thing that was done to several people around her when I think it was, 13 people who were shot and six of them died. It's a horrible mass shooting. And nobody, of course, can in any way minimize or satellitize, if you will, the horror that she experienced. But I contend that what was done to the Guarena family was at least as bad, if only because the killers are still at large and they've been decorated and promoted for the depraved deeds that they did. That's one testimony that should have been offered. Another testimony that should have been offered would have been from the family of a woman from Baltimore by the name of Sherilyn Noel. And I bring this up because another star witness of this hearing was a police chief from Baltimore County, Maryland, named James Johnson. He's the chief of police in Baltimore County. I don't know if they have a county sheriff in Baltimore County, but it's interesting they have a county police department. And that's troubling, of course, because the sheriff, rather than the police, should be the chief peace officer at the county level. He should be the person who has that jurisdiction. Baltimore County is a terrible place to live for a number of reasons. There's a great deal of urban violence, and what's much the same thing, there's a great deal of government corruption. I contend that there are two heads, if you will, the same beaks, the same hydra. There are, on average, two or three paramilitary SWAT raids every week in Baltimore County. Nobody knows for sure because there are over 1,600 SWAT raids in Maryland every year. 1,600 SWAT raids in the state of Maryland every single year. I'm old enough to remember when SWAT was genuinely exceptional. When I was a grade school student, I used to watch SWAT, the television program, and of course it was a form of propaganda. It was produced in cooperation with the LAPD, which is where the domestic SWAT teams were first introduced in 1968 by future Chief Darrell Gates. I found out, and I don't know why it took me so long to discover this, that the first SWAT teams, as we would recognize them, were actually organized by U.S. military advisors in Southeast Asia, specifically Vietnam, in 1959, I believe, Vietnam and Laos, but Vietnam for certain. This was something that was done before we got involved in that ill-begotten and tragic conflict that ended up consolidating communism in Southeast Asia rather than turning it back. In any case, SWAT teams were supposed to be used only in exceptional circumstances involving hostages or urban terrorism or things of that sort. 1,600 SWAT raids take place in Maryland every single year. And in 2005, once again in January of that year, there was a 4:30 a.m. SWAT raid on the residential home of the Noel family, because the 18-year-old son was the subject of a narcotics warrant. Somebody during let me roll back the clock. October of 2004, there was a traffic stop, and in the course of the traffic stop, the officer found a package containing what was called a white powder. It was never identified as narcotics. But another officer was sent to pick through the garbage at the address of the Noel family's home, and he found what was described as drug residue, which is to say marijuana seeds. And on the basis of a few marijuana seeds, they got a no-knock search warrant from a compliant judge. And at 4:30 in the morning, they sent a SWAT team to throw flashbang grenades through the windows and batter down the front door of that home. Sherilyn Noel, not knowing who these armed intruders were, grabbed the firearm that she had in her nightstand because they live in a bad neighborhood and because their family had been afflicted by conventional criminal violence. She grabbed the gun and stood up and waited for somebody to enter the doorway. If somebody was going to enter the door and threaten her and her husband in their sleep, she wanted to be ready. The first person through the door was a figure wearing black. He was wearing black military fatigues. He had a tactical vest on, body armor. He wore a ballistic helmet with a face shield. He was holding in front of him a ballistic shield, which is a bullet-resistant impediment. This man was named Carlos Artson, and he was a SWAT officer. He saw Sherilyn Noel holding a gun, and his reaction was to shoot her twice in the upper torso, sending her to the floor. I don't know whether she was dead. It's quite possible that she was dead, but she was certainly paralyzed. Artson yelled at her to move away from the gun, but she couldn't comply. And so he walked up to her in a point-blank range to deliver the coup de grace. This was an act of murder. There's no way of getting around this. There's no justification for what was done. First of all, they had no right to be staging a 4:30 a.m. raid over a few marijuana seeds. Nonviolent drug offense does not justify a paramilitary response. Secondly, the subject of the arrest warrant, the 18-year-old son, was on the ground floor of that home. They did not have to go upstairs to find him. They found him within seconds. They had no reason to go upstairs, not even to clear the house. They had no reason to do this. But it's pretty clear that once she was on the floor and unable to respond to the officer's orders, the coup de grace was a premeditated malicious act of criminal homicide. The family sued the police department, and the police chief at the time, a man by the name of Terrence Sheridan, that's the name of some disrepute in that part of the world. You know, Sheridan is not looked upon with fondness, particularly if you get to the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. But Chief Sheridan reacted to the lawsuit by conferring the Silver Medal of Valor on Officer Artson, which is their second highest commendation. And then a few months later, he was replaced by then-Colonel Johnson, who's now the police chief. Colonel Johnson was the official in charge of the tactical teams. In other words, he had command responsibility for the atrocity that was committed against the family of Sherilyn Noel. And Artson remains on the force. Last year, he was involved, I believe last June, he was involved in the almost identical shooting where they were serving a no-knock warrant on a residential home. They went up to the second floor. They barged into the bedroom of the homeowner. This homeowner reacted by grabbing a sword and using it to hit the ballistic shield of Carlos Artson. He was shot twice at point-blank range and killed. There's no testimony from the family of that homeowner or the family of the late Sherilyn Noel at the hearing last, I believe it was last Thursday.
What happened with the lawsuit for the first family brought a lawsuit?
They lost the lawsuit. People almost always lose lawsuits of that kind because of a fictional doctrine called qualified immunity. It's the Lon Horiuchi doctrine. If you're doing it on the king's errand, then whatever you do is considered to be prescriptively permissible. As long as you're doing it under legitimate orders. It's really the inversion of the Nuremberg principle. You can be exculpated from carrying out acts that are obvious criminal acts, including homicide, as long as you're doing it according to rules of engagement that are written by your superiors. And so Artson, the lawsuit against Artson was dismissed, and the federal judge, I believe it was 2 years ago, I think it was the Fourth Circuit court, refused to hear the appeal. So that's pretty much been put to bed. That's why Art's still on the street, still collecting his paycheck, and still killing people.
Well, I'm going to have to interrupt you here because I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your PayPal button, how they can get your articles off of certainly Lou Rockwell.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. My chief outlet is my blog. It's called Pro Libertate. If you go to Google and type in Pro Libertate and my last name, Grigg, G-R-I-G-G, then you should be able to find it. If not, the direct URL, the direct web address is freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is one word. freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or go to Google or Bing or some other search engine and type in Pro Libertate and Grigg, or just William N. as in Norman, William N. Grigg. That should take you there. And there is a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay for those who have the means to donate and were interested in helping me. And we are really grateful for all the help that we have received. It's a tremendous blessing and one for which we will always be thankful. I also publish quite frequently at lewrockwell.com. That's lewrockwell.com. Mr. Rockwell is the head of the Ludwig von Mises Institute in Alabama. And as a matter of fact, the essay that I published a couple of days ago about that hearing, it was on Wednesday that the Senate hearing was held. That has been republished in tomorrow's edition of lewrockwell.com. It's the top, very top headline on the lewrockwell.com page. And they always publish the night before the date of publication. So the weekend edition of lewrockwell.com is already available. Lou Rockwell, lewrockwell.com. And I also frequently post items on the blog section of that website. You can find it on the right-hand side of the page if you go to lewrockwell.com.
And once again, your website is?
Pro Libertate, ProLibertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com.
Okay, and of course, as you know, William writes the newsletter, Radio Liberty newsletter. The January newsletter will be out in about 2 weeks. It's completed. It's one of the most shocking newsletters I've had. It really makes the point very, very well of the very imminent threat we face. And certainly I've read a lot of newsletters. I think this is one of the finest ones I've ever read. So if you certainly would like a free copy, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we hope that you will become a regular subscriber to RadioLiberty.com. And of course, if you're already a member of the Radio Liberty family or take our newsletter, you'll get it automatically. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, right now we've got Bruce on the line from Spokane. Bruce, did you have a question or comment?
Well, I do. We just had a similar incident in Washington State, Auburn, Washington, which is over on the coast in King County. Two police broke into a man's apartment without a warrant in the middle of the night, started shouting orders at him, and then shot him 16 times. Now, amazingly enough, the man lived. Mm-hmm. He was looking for his flashlight. They shot him 16 times. Then the police told the investigator that he was going for a gun and said he had guns in the place, which was an absolute lie. But the man lived, and then they called it a justified shooting after it was over. And it's, it's just, it's typical of what's going on. We do have a police state in America, and we're allowing it by not calling it out, continually calling it out and calling it what it is.
Well, I think there's a camaraderie among the police. I understand that. Well, they want to look after one another. But, ladies and gentlemen, if the police do the wrong thing, they should be treated like everybody else. Yeah. And if they shoot and they kill a man and without justification, if they break into a home without a warrant, they have no justification.
Yes, I know that, but that's the thing is they do protect themselves. We've had police kill unarmed people right here in Spokane, and the police themselves covered up.
Oh, let's get William's remarks on that. William, go right ahead.
In the case that you're referring to in Auburn, what happened is that they were looking for the roommate who was suspected of a parole violation, and the reason why they went to the downstairs bedroom, the basement bedroom, was because they wanted to find out that there were guns on the premises they could use in order to revoke the guy's probation. And they went into this bedroom, this unlit bedroom, and rather than turning on the light, they shot the guy. And as you point out, the prosecutor investigated the case, in spite of the fact that the stories didn't match and that there were discrepancies in the accounts given by the parole officer who carried out the shooting, he said that it was justified, because that's the default setting for prosecutors when they investigate crimes by police. And you're right, Dr. Stan, there should be a uniform standard of law for everybody who uses lethal force. And anybody who commits any other kind of aggressive violence against any other person, there should be no special immunity for police officers or anybody else for that matter.
Bruce, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us.
You bet. Talk to you later.
God bless. Okay, fine. Well, William, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. We're looking forward to having you again next week. And, of course, William is going to be doing some other programs with us, just going into the background of our justice system. And, of course, we look forward to those programs as well. Good night, William. God bless. And thank you so very much for your help.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless.
And you too. Bye-bye. And, of course, that was William Grigg. And we hope that you will be listening every Friday evening at this time when you'll be back with us again next week. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that my ministry is primarily listener-supported. We do have some advertisers, have a few people to help us, but we're still largely dependent upon our listeners. And if you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or subscribe to our newsletter, or certainly you can certainly donate to us, or you can get the various items we carry. And we carry them because these are items we think are important. We have wonderful DVDs. We have wonderful videos. We have a great 4-CD sets and 4-tape sets. If you'd like to get the catalog, why, we'd be glad to send you one. Or you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And I should simply point out that if you'd like to hear our programs, we do 5 hours of talk radio a day. Early in the morning, we do a program at 7 o'clock Pacific time on the American Freedom Network. Then we have a program in the afternoon on Genesis, our evening Radio Liberty programs. And, of course, you can listen at least 4 hours a day to the programs, 4 hours a day, that are archived at RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. Of course, you can listen to the live programs there because we have a satellite hookup, which we share with Joyce Riley. And so we do hope that if you're out there across America, you'll not only listen, but you'll encourage others to listen. Because we will tell you about the truth. We have a secret government. In fact, David Rockefeller refers to it on page 405 of his memoirs as a secret cabal. And as he says, they, meaning, of course, common people like you and I, they think that we are part of a secret cabal, working against the best interests of the United States, conspiring with others throughout the world to bring about a more integrated, a global and political system. And if that's the charge, I am guilty. I'm an internationalist and I'm proud of it. And then he talks about how they've raised the living standards of other countries throughout the world. And ladies and gentlemen, they have raised the living standards, but they're lowering the living standards here, and they're going to lower them a lot more. And they're going to destroy the infrastructure of this society as they intensely transfer our jobs and our wealth and our manufacturing to other countries. There is an elite. It's the Trilateral Commission. The honorary chairman happens to be a member of a man named David Rockefeller. In fact, he is also the honorary chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, which was created as a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891 to bring about a world government. That's beautifully covered in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which we hope you'll want to get. Because if you want to get the original work on that, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Nighttime by Professor Quigley back at Georgetown University. I spent weeks going through his papers there. We have the original ones. And basically, there was a secret society, and it still exists today. The goal is a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and they want to destroy Christianity because behind this entire movement are powerful occult forces. And if you doubt it, go to the website of the Trilateral Commission, trilateral.org. Trilateral.org and look at their logo. And if you look closely, you'll see there are three curved arrows. And if you look at the inside, you can almost imagine you can see a six. But there's no question the three arrows are joined together by an upside-down broken cross, the emblem of the ancient mystery religions of antiquity. And certainly you can go up on the internet and look up ancient symbols. You'll find this is true. We have certainly, we're actually aligned against powerful spiritual forces that want to use the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world totalitarian regime and kill off the majority of the people in the world. If you haven't heard my talk on population control, the covert agenda, or my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan, you need to get them. You'll get them by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or by going to our website at RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com. Tell others about our program. Don't lecture them. Ask them questions. Try to get them to think. Ask them why the Israelis would release 1,000 soldiers, 1,000 prisoners, or many of them murderers to get back one soldier. And then please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
One new thing every week, and I just forgot this week to introduce it. We'll do it next week. So lay back, enjoy. You don't have to do anything this week. Now we're going to talk about improving ourselves one step at a time. I got to get on the stick on this and do it right. Thank you, Josh. Josh is in the studio today. Thank you, Josh.
Good morning. You're welcome.
Welcome to the Power Hour today. Glad to have you aboard.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. It is, what, 07 degrees? Ought
yep.
7?
It was 7.
We used to say ought 7 degrees back in my day,
mm-hmm.
which is not your day, obviously.
No, but I know the...
You've heard ought 7?
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Well, like 30 ought 6 rifle. That's a deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, men are always into those.
Well,
we're going to talk about men in there. Why they like a gun better than a woman a little bit later, too. Anyway, we are glad to have you join us today, and thank you so very much for caring enough to tune in to the Power Hour today. All I can say is if you